Well, if you're a smoker and you are not interested in quitting smoking, you need to take a good look at yourself, because there is nothing more important than smoking cessation for your health if you are a smoker. I mean, literally nothing. And Fume is a number one natural way to quit smoking. They take the benefits of superplants, behavioral science, lovely design. They make the quitting of smoking a bit easier. Hand-to-mouth replacement, plant-packed cores, studied to curb cravings. They taste and smell great. There's no smoke, no vape, no nicotine, no harmful chemicals. And if someone in your life, someone you love, is a smoker, this is a very nice way to give them the gift of cessation, of stopping smoking. That's right. And they have unique flavors, candy cane, eggnog cookies, limited supply. Each box is numbered. And you can go and get and you can get these products at breathefume.com/Drew. That's BREATHEFUM. No, not FUME, FUM.com/Drew. Use that code Drew to save 10% on your order today. Again, buy a holiday box for somebody you care. And if it's you, care about yourself, go to breathefume.com/Drew. Get your holiday box today and start giving the gift of quitting smoking. One more time, that's BREATHEFUM.com/Drew, and you will save 10%.
Do you think bananas are healthy? Think again. I'm Dr. Stephen Gundry, best-selling author of the Plant Paradox series, and on the Dr. Gundry podcast, you're going to learn the foods to eat and the ones to avoid to lose weight, boost your energy, and feel your most vibrant, active self this year. You'll also learn simple tips from the world's top experts on health and nutrition. Plus, you'll discover the truth about calories, how running could actually be hurting your health, and why fat won't make you fat. Subscribe now to the Dr. Gundry podcast on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts. Because I'm Dr. Gundry, and I'm always looking out for you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Drew Podcast. We appreciate you guys being here. Do check out some of the other stuff I do at DrDrew.tv, that streaming show. I think you might like that. And then, of course, After Dark. And don't forget all the good stuff over at Instagram, Dr. Pinsky. And I'll do some live stuff there, too, as well. And, of course, Twitter. And we appreciate you guys being here. I want to get right to my guests. Aida Rodriguez, stand-up comedians. The special is Fighting Words, available now as we air this podcast. November 4th is where it became available. It concludes with a documentary of – and am I pronouncing name? Is it Aida or Aida?
Aida.
Aida. Because I see – I come from a white boy background, right?
I love that you just say it.
And so I think of an opera when I
a lot of people do.
Let me keep going. The trip to Puerto Rico, where you're reunited with your estranged father, which is amazing. You can follow Aida on at Funny Aida, FUNNYAIDA, also YouTube/AidaRodriguez. And I recommend the stand-up highly. And when we finish our conversation, you will see why. Welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So there's a million things I want to get into with
okay.
you. And not the least of which is that when you walked in, you said, I was on the phone with my therapist. I thought, okay, well, that's catnip for me. So, but I want to come back around to that.
Okay.
First, I really appreciated your stand-up in terms of, and I hope I'm characterizing this correctly, the complexity of Hispanic culture and families,
yeah.
and it dovetails very nicely into the complexity of race and ethnicity in our country generally, which has become a cartoon created by white people. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And you take aim at everybody, I would say, which I love. I love that. So how would you characterize that to me? You know what I would? That's what I took away. What would you say?
Well, I think that's a great description of it. I think it's important to hold the powers that be, you know, responsible for what they've done to people of color and at the same time hold ourselves accountable for how we participate in this. And I think that we miss a part in holding ourselves accountable. I think that we've become so polarized and everything gets politicized that we don't have.
We meaning the country?
Just the country and in general.
Because one of the things I noticed, and I like really dug from a comedy, and by the way, it's very funny. So I know that's your first goal. So it is funny, everybody. But it has layers to it. And I like the layer part for this podcast. It reminded me a little bit of what Ali Wong does with Asian culture.
Yeah.
What you did with Hispanic culture. Like, it's not one thing. It's a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, it is. We're nuanced. There is no, like, when I hate going into these meetings with executives because they're like, we got to conquer the Latino market. There's no such thing.
And should I say Hispanic, Latino, Latinos?
You can say either. Some people identify as Hispanic. Some people identify as Latinx. Some people don't want to identify as either.
You understand it's confusing to...
Of course, it's confusing to me.
It's like really super confusing. Like, I want to get it right, but like,
it's complicated.
Yeah.
It's, you know, even people from like.
White people could identify as Hispanic, but go ahead.
Absolutely.
People from Spain are
Hispanic, and they're white people who speak Spanish. And then there are people from the Caribbean who.
And there are white people who want to get into Harvard that do it too.
That's it, absolutely. So, and white women who, you know,
don't want to be called Karen.
No. Don't want to be called Karen, but do Karen kind of stuff.
Yeah.
It's all complicated, and we have to be able to break through and have nuanced conversations we're never going to get through to the other side. But, you know, there are people from the Caribbean who don't want to be called less Latino or Hispanic. They are now identifying as Afro-Caribbean or Afro-Puerto Rican or Afro-Cuban, which I respect, and I think everybody should have their identity. I just think that, you know, it's important for us to be able to just have conversations. And that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to spark conversations. Nuance is just disappearing in conversation.
Right. It's all cartoon now.
I love that you said it's a cartoon.
Yeah. Because fake news is a cartoon version of complicated stories. So it becomes propaganda.
Absolutely.
Really. And so I've been in many shitstorms on social media, and it's always not what I said.
Right.
It's what somebody said I said, and then that's the shitstorm. It's never the actual story. It's always one removed that's untrue, but cartoon version, and off it goes.
Yeah.
And I say the same thing as it pertains to what we've done with race and race culture, ethnic culture, and stuff like that. And I think you take aim at that in the
– Absolutely.
Pretty clearly. And it is – what you're doing is complicated on multiple levels because you're saying we participate in it, but it's foisted on you by elites, people in power.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's not just, you know, like it's so complicated because Washington is always talking about Hollywood. Hollywood is always talking about Washington, and they're all shitty. You know,
shitty. What the fuck are they talking about?
Everybody's always talking about how hard you have. Every morning you have a bunch of rich people sitting on television telling poor people what they should be thinking and how they should be feeling. And it is so.
Yeah.
It's so, you know, I was homeless. I struggled in my, and I'm still struggling. I live in an apartment. I'm not, you know, by any means wealthy, but I still am respectful of the people who have jobs that make $12 an hour and knowing that even in my own apartment, my reality is very different than people who are making towels and people who work in mines and work in factories. And I just think that we just sit around. First of all, you know what I have to do on a very, very frequent basis? I have to always go check statistics of how many people in the world are actually on social media so I can put it into perspective, right? Mm-hmm. Like the last time I checked, it was like 4% of Americans were on Twitter and 7% of the world. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot. That's a lot of people who are not on there. So to remember not to take that so
seriously,
you know, so seriously, because it's really just people who have time to say a thread.
But I noticed, strangely, we're having this conversation yesterday, that I think Twitter hit a weird little threshold. I think, because I was portrayed on John Oliver as having an opinion that was again false, wrong, and it's funny that they picked out something that I said on a different podcast where I remember saying, "God, I didn't express that properly."
Right.
And pulled it out. That's it. That's my opinion. It was false. And a shitstorm ensued. And then I said, no, I set the record straight. And another guy who's actually more sort of a opinion maker set it straight in a different way, but set it straight. And it just stopped. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, Twitter's getting more powerful than television today. Because in the past, once television caused a shitstorm on social media, it continued. You couldn't do anything to stop it.
Right. Did so you get canceled yesterday? Is that what
I got? I was on the verge of getting canceled. I've been canceled many times. It's like,
yeah, me too.
And it's like, what are you going to do? What do you get canceled for?
So I got canceled. I was on a panel that was about
and by the way, don't have to say it if it's going to get you canceled again.
No. So, it was about Hispanic Heritage Month. And there was – we have a very big fight in our community, a valid fight about colorism, which I've always spoken about in comedy since I started doing stand-up 13 years ago. It's not new for me because for some people, this is a thing. They talk about it because they want to get followers. They want to do documentaries. Mm-hmm. They want to do podcasts. They want to sell t-shirts. For me, it's something that I've been doing because it caused a lot of pain in my family. You know, it caused a lot of pain to my family members.
You're going to have to define it because I'm not aware. So, and this is, by the way, this is part of the job right now for white people is to just ask, just get.
I appreciate you asking.
Appreciate you don't know shit, and then start to educate yourself.
No, but I appreciate that. Yeah. So you know, within our community, there is a system of a hierarchy of what is better in terms of being lighter and the closer your proximity.
So African Americans have the same thing. Right?
Yeah, it's global.
It's weird to me.
Indians too, and Asians
that's
too.
Weird to me as a right. because we as. Why do you want skin that you get melanoma? And who gives a shit?
Well, that's the lie was told that it was better. So,
and black women have a thing about hair too, where it gets more. There's a higher status to less black.
Curl.
Yeah, it's like what? Why?
Well, I mean, white supremacy is why. But.
Yes, that's right. And so it's Stockholm syndrome, right?
Yeah, it's a lie. It's the greatest lie ever told. Is to tell a people that. The darker you are, the lesser value you have. But the problem is that a lot of us adopted that as a belief.
It's Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, and we do it to each other.
Oof.
And so we were on a panel and we were having...
Or it's power stuff, power games. Just another way of creating power within a group.
It's also... it's divide and conquer. Because if we're fighting about, you know, hair texture and complexion, but none of our conditions are changing, then they're winning. And that's really the big goal anyway.
Or everybody's losing, really.
Well, we all are. Yeah. And I'm glad you said that because I appreciate you saying that. Because really, I was just talking to somebody yesterday, even like I get a lot of like hate from white racist people who can't stand me or whatever. And you think about somebody who's like from, you know, I'll say someone that sent me a really ugly message from Omaha and. You know, poor, you can tell, not very educated. And the one thing he felt like he had over me was that he was white. Mm. And I was like, tell me that that's not sad and that's not an illness. That you think that you don't have health care, you're poor, you probably don't read well because your post, you know, was indicative of that. And the one thing you think you have over me is your complexion. That's an illness.
And, like, and that's being taken away. That's why they're freaking out.
Absolutely.
So you know, let me give you I have kind of a rush of ideas with what you're talking about. The idea of white supremacy, I think, is the word needs to be altered or something.
Yeah,
because
I agree.
When people about white supremacy, they think about skinheads, and that's not what we're talking about.
No.
But I give you based on the word as we use it today, I have two of my own personal stories of white supremacy. And one is I was working on Teen Mom, and my co-host has you know, African-American boyfriend or whatever. And one of the moms brought up having to deal with racism in West Virginia. And I was like, what? Really? We still have that? And I was like – and she looked at me. She went, what is the matter with you? And I thought, that's my privilege. That's my I know. I was like, uh-oh, I got to really watch. I got to educate myself. So that's why I'm asking you lots of questions. And I went deep, and I got completely moved, you know, sort of had a rush of insight with Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm.
I read a bunch of stuff, his words, and a bunch of, and I got deep into the Reconstruction. I was like, "Oh fuck, this is a thing that we pushed into our unconscious because we can't deal with it. It's too gross. It's too horrible." But he, the way he got through to me, Frederick Douglass, was he called Abraham Lincoln a white supremacist. And I was like, clutching my pearls. Like, what?
The guy
Abraham
who freed
Lincoln?
The streets.
And I was like, and then he goes on to explain himself. And I'm like, oh, I get it. I get it. It's what I'm doing when I say, what? Does racism still exist? You're kidding me. It's like that's you're sitting on high somewhere else and you really are not in with the people's experience. And you have an obligation to share. And be a part of.
Why would you, though, you know? Like, how would you be?
That's gross.
No, I know.
It's gross.
It is gross. Yeah, but by design, though.
Well, fine, but I don't want to be a part of it. And it's gross, and it bothers. You know, I hate that I was that way, and I'm trying not to be. And so that's, again, one of the reasons I'm so excited to talk to you. So.
Well, that's honest, though, and that I appreciate more than people that say, I've never seen color.
I know. That was me. That was me. And I thought that's huge. That's white supremacy. That's what that is. And maybe we need a new word to describe that. But that is a Eurocentric Caucasian point of view and experience. And it needs to be expanded. It needs to just be expanded. Comedy is a great way to do it, I think.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, watch the special, everybody. It now HBO Max. Go get it. And Tiffany Haddish has been part of your life, right?
Yeah, she is. She still is.
Another important voice in all this. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And I wish she'd get more into her Jewish heritage, too, and make fun of that more because there's lots of comedy there.
I think she's doing that.
She's starting to go that way?
I think she's probably doing that now.
So let me get back to you and your homelessness. How did that happen? Well, you were a teen mom, I guess.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And you know what? Let me tell you about homelessness. I really have been – I've been unpacking a lot of this because I think that it's important to talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
We really I was homeless from one day to the next. I was working at a job at a private bank. My residence was their West Coast office for tax purposes and business purposes because I was one of their employees. They were based out in the Midwest. And they let me go for a – they let me go. The owner of the company was friends with my ex-husband.
Mm.
And my ex-husband convinced him to let me go so that I could quit, lose my job and come back to him, which happens to a lot of women who are in toxic relationships with men who, you know, where there's a power dynamic and that was there. But it was just from one day to the next. You know, I had my two kids. I had a job. I was driving around in a decent vehicle. I lived in a decent place. And one day I pull up and the sheriff is at my house and they're removing my stuff out of my apartment because I didn't even know that I was being evicted because all of the paperwork and all of the stuff was being sent to this office.
Oh.
And it can happen to anyone. So I just want to make sure that we humanize people who are unhoused, as I've been corrected. These people are human beings. And while we're having conversations about the terminology and the semantics and let's remember that they're people and they have a voice. And the most important thing is for them to get help as opposed to how we categorize them.
Yeah. But there's two gigantic and different populations in subpopulations. And again, that's not making them human by clumping everyone into one category.
Absolutely.
The category that you represent is usually able to get off the street within 3 to 6 months. Is that what happened to you?
Well, yeah. I actually went to live with a friend.
Yeah. Or that's the other thing. They find places to stay off the street. Yeah. They're couch surfing kind of thing, which is another giant population.
Absolutely. With comedians, we tend to couch surf.
Well, that was Pete Holmes' story. Yeah. That was the whole series about that. But in any event, but the ones that are on the street in the tents have drug addiction and mental illness. We have to treat that. You can't just put them in a house and expect them to do beautifully. They will die. They will die. So I take issue with us. And this is what happened to me with John Oliver. He puts it all in one category. It's just housing. It's like, oh. I wish it were just
no,
housing.
Because
I wish.
You can house a person who has mental illness. I've lived with it. I was raised by it. You can house someone who has addiction. I was raised by it. And they will eventually go back to the street because they're seeking refuge in the street. They don't want to be.
It depends what drug you're using, but some of it is you want to be out where your drug is.
Yeah.
And some of it, if it's meth, it drives you to the street.
Yeah.
Meth just makes you unable to stay in walls. Mm-hmm. You just got to get out there. So who had mental illness and addiction? And can you talk about it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm still dealing with it. Now my mom is addicted to pills.
Mm.
I
blame the doctors, not her.
I do too. Mm. She had a knee injury.
Fuck. Can't believe that still happens. God damn it.
I started watching Dope Sick and I had to stop because it really triggered me because it really is my mother's story. Mm. And I remember rushing her to the emergency room after taking 18 Percocets and still battling with it today.
So
eight interventions later.
Oh, has she ever had any sustained abstinence or sobriety or anything?
No.
Has she been on Suboxone?
Yeah.
Yeah. Suboxone, you know, even with the pain patients, which she is one of them, works pretty well if somebody skilled is using it. So it's just something to file away. If she's not responding to treatment, Suboxone is an option and will give her a better quality of life than all that other bullshit.
Got it. That's good to hear because I'll definitely go. I am my mother's codependent. So
all right, that's good. That's all right. You can't help it. And the other thing is watch out for the benzodiazepines and sleeping pills because inevitably when you're on opiates during the day, you get some withdrawal, you feel anxious, you can't sleep at night, and the doctor is going to give you those pills.
Yes.
It's the same doctor that's going to give you a benzodiazepine.
It's the same doctor.
And that's how people die, is those two together.
Yeah.
Be very, very careful. It's hard to overdose on Percocet and die. It's easy to overdose, but hard to die on it. You add in a little Xanax, toast.
Wow. That's good
so
to know.
So be very careful. And mental illness, you calling that the same person or was their mental illness also separate?
I think that my mom's never been properly diagnosed.
Bipolar or something?
I think so. And so
you describe her kind of that way in the stand up.
Yeah. The high.
And the aggression, the irritability and all that stuff. So,
yeah. And so we've never had her properly diagnosed. We can't get her out of the grasp of this doctor.
Is he in this country or is he?
Yeah, in Florida.
Jesus.
Florida.
Oh.
I mean, if that's this country.
I've had so many people, my patients killed by that kind of physician.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I stopped running a program. So I can't do this anymore. It's one of the reasons. It's not as common now as it was 10 years ago, but it was routine 10 years ago that I would get everybody straightened out, get them sober, get them going. They're going great. That guy's always there and the addict knows that. They go back and they literally would say things like, why do you let those people try to brainwash you? I'm your doctor. You need to take these pills.
Yep.
You'll need to be on them forever.
So what they do is they do this little vacation for her where she goes and gets detoxed. I Baker acted her in Florida and he got her off.
It's so awful.
He just puts her in the psych ward.
Ugh.
And then she's there for a couple of weeks.
I just did a podcast with a guy named Greg Ellis who was put in a psych ward because of his family law problems with a divorce. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, that doesn't happen. No, not our hospital systems. Something is grossly out of line. Yeah. I was a hospital administrator for 20 years. That would not have happened at my facility.
Oh, no.
But now I think things are just like – out of control.
And we feel, as a family, we feel helpless because we can't go. He is the head of the psychiatric department at the hospital.
Oh, no.
So we're battling, and we've been battling with this for years.
I am so sorry. And then you reunite with your dad. How was that?
So that was, it was in the Dominican Republic, not Puerto Rico. It was hard.
Wait a minute. Is your mom Dominican?
My mother's Puerto Rican.
Oh, she's the Puerto Rican. Okay,
she's the Puerto Rican. He was hard.
Like, I feel like the DR is in the consciousness more lately for some reason.
Yeah.
Like people from Dominican Republic are becoming trendy or something. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, they have been trendy because they are here and they've been here. And now they've done such a lot of building in the communities in New York.
Is that what it is?
Washington Heights is just – and
okay, right.
Dykeman has been – it's just they're thriving and they're really showing up and they're really, making great things happen in fashion and all industries. I wouldn't even limit it to fashion.
Oh, that's so interesting. So that's I could feel something was happening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so how was it reuniting with him? And again, there's a whole
It was hard because I haven't seen this man since I was little and I was expecting him to like rescue me, and I had to, I felt like I needed to rescue him. And, you know, I wanted to share that, the first time that you see me see him, that's the first time I actually saw him. It wasn't scripted.
Yeah, yeah.
There wasn't like another take. That was the actual first moment of me seeing him, which is why I made the weird face, because it was, I didn't know what to feel.
Yeah.
But it was just like, a lot of people feel this way. A lot of people who I know, women that are friends of mine who are, have estranged fathers, are waiting on their dad to come rescue them or come. And I just wanted people to see that sometimes it doesn't go that way. And sometimes
I've never seen it go that way.
And it's okay, though.
I usually discourage people from those reunitings, because they're, in my experience, neutral to a disappointment always.
Yeah, it was really it was hard. And I knew about the siblings. I made a joke about it.
It was very funny.
Yeah, but I knew about them. But, you know, it was surreal to actually see them come in. And
each of you got a mother. You get a mom. You get a mom.
Oh my, it was just weird to see these different people who I am related to. And they've been living these lives knowing about me. And I, up until he found me, I knew nothing about them. So it was overwhelming. And it was just hard because that was just a 3-day trip. So.
Oof. A lot of material to work on in therapy, though.
Absolutely.
And he turned out to be a terrible singer about the bitches.
You know, he's actually a good singer, but a bad songwriter. Okay. So he became woke, and now, you know, he has this
That's what I want to get into, which is that here is a guy who exploited women, marginally sociopathic, or maybe just dumb and young or whatever, but – you know, not doing lots of things, doing lots of things to lots of people, including the offspring and the women, and not really, certainly not living up to any responsibilities associated with them. And then magically, he's given sort of grace by being woke.
Yeah.
And then pointing the finger at everybody else.
Yeah. That's woke culture, though.
Is that what woke is?
For me, that's why I make fun of it, because, you know, I don't know. Last time I checked, we were all a work in progress, right? All of us. And just to hear people, there's so much performative wokeness, and I'm so tired of that. It's so insulting to people who are actually marginalized, even those who are, that belong to our groups, who are really capitalizing on our struggle, sitting around pointing the finger as if, and if you sat down and you scrutinized those people's lives, you would find scandal, trauma, and cancellation worthy stuff as well. And
that's the woke people.
The woke people. And that's why it's like, because it begins at home, right? I'm imperfect. I'm not going back to scrub Twitter. I'm not going back to scrub Facebook. I know I fucked up. I'm sure I said something that was insensitive to somebody. I'm sure I've done things that are imperfect. And I hope that today I'm a much, much more evolved person than then. That's all I can hope for. But I can't live my life running away from my mistakes, because I'm only human. And I'm tired of this, you know. I do think it is important to call out people who are in positions of power using their power to oppress others.
Isn't that the woke?
Nah, sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's just taking the heat off of yourself and putting it onto some other people. Liberals really pride themselves in being woke and being there for people. But tell me honestly, which administration has really been beneficial for people of color who are struggling?
That's
none.
Right. None, yeah.
So when we sit here and say, oh, the Democrats, tell me how the life of black people in this country and the lives of immigrants have improved under any administration. Mm-hmm. Like, we just sit here and tell these stories because people say racism is wrong, that they're on our side. But I don't care about that. I appreciate the people who say I hate you more, because at least I know.
You know what's up.
Right. But the people who are in my face, who actually are doing nothing, are not willing to lay down their privilege to create equity, those are the problematic people for me.
And so you'd mentioned that marginalized folks are – you said these words. Marginalized people are capitalizing.
Some of us are.
Yeah. And so is that the problem, that it's sort of the best thing you've got to go with and you're going with it, as opposed to creating a new movement that really does serve your needs?
Well, I mean, I think some people really think that they're helping other people. Narcissism is real. Well, you know what I mean? Some people really think they are out here.
I think it's all projection of narcissism.
Of course.
And your point is well taken. It's like you need a great leader who actually understands what needs to get done and just get it done.
Yeah, I need somebody who grew up struggling, who went to a state school, who had food stamps. Somebody who, and I believe they said we've had that, but there's just a lot of, that is why I decided to go to Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic, because I capitalize on the struggles of Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. And I said, I'm going to go there. I'm going to hire Puerto Ricans and Dominicans, and I'm going to let them tell their stories and be present in this piece, because I am capitalizing on Puerto Ricans and Dominicans. So I just feel like people have to be honest about, we just sit on these high horses and we're all full of shit.
Let me.
Well, of course, our friends at BetterHelp. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. I talk about BetterHelp a lot, and about the use of Zoom and the sort of electronic media that now people are accustomed to using. And the fact is, people think you should wait until things are unbearable to go to therapy, but that is just not true. It's a tool, and you should be going before things get really problematic. Would you wait to rehab your knee until you couldn't walk anymore? I mean, it's just kind of silly the way we treat the brain. And the fact is, BetterHelp has great online therapists. I refer families, I refer my family, I refer patients, and I've been very impressed with the services they offer. BetterHelp is customized online therapy. It offers video, phone, even live chat sessions with your therapist, so you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. And of course, I think that, you know, the waiting room is one of the biggest barriers to people going ahead and getting therapy. I've said this before, but people get uncomfortable waiting there and who they're going to run into and that kind of thing. And this is much more affordable than in-person therapy. You can be matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. Give it a try. See why over 2 million people have used BetterHelp Online Therapy. And the Dr. Drew podcast listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/Drew. That is betterhelp.com/DREW. I'd like to introduce you to ZBiotics, the world's first genetically engineered probiotic that addresses the after effects of, well, alcohol, amongst other things. It was developed by a PhD scientist, and its technology is patented. The holidays are here, so ZBiotics is a must-have. They break down the byproduct of alcohol called acetaldehyde, chemical most responsible for what happens after drinking. And this pre-alcohol probiotic can help you keep living your life, whether it's getting to your morning workout or being productive at work. And I'm not saying you should drink excessively. I'm not suggesting that, but it is the holidays. So you take the ZBiotics before a few responsible beverages so that you can wake up and feel great the next day. ZBiotics is for people who like to be prepared and make the most of their mornings, of course. It will not affect intoxication, and it is not a magic bullet, and it is not something for people that have a problem with alcohol, okay? And there are only 3 ingredients in ZBiotics: the bioengineered probiotic, water, and natural flavor. Not a mixture of vitamins and minerals. It's real science designed to do one job. That's right, ZBiotics. Check it out for yourself. That is ZBiotics. Well, winter is again upon us, and we need to take extra care to protect ourselves against bacteria, viruses, infectious diseases. They're up in the winter. You can do everything right. Wash your hands. Keep your hands away from your face. Carry around sanitizers, but of course, you can still get sick. That's why you need to protect your body from the inside out. That's right. You can build up your immune system with some high-quality and high-strength probiotics. P3OM. I've used them for years. It's a patented probiotic that might be the most effective probiotic yet. P3OM fights bacteria and strengthens immunity. At least that's the intention. Basically, a superhero for our gut biome. But it also helps digestion, speeds up metabolism, increases energy, hopefully. That's right. And probiotics, we should all be taking one. And just when I thought P3OM could not get any more powerful, I watched a video, which you can see at p3om.com/Drew, of how this probiotic is breaking down a piece of steak. That's right. Here's some awesome news. You can get 10% off P3OM right now by going to p3om.com/Drew and typing in our coupon code DrDrew10. And if you order it, and it's not everything you hope for, their support team will give you all your money back, no questions asked. So if you want to increase your protection against infectious diseases and hopefully help your digestion, visit p3om.com. That is p
P3, the letters OM.com/Drew to get a 10% discount with our coupon code DrDrew10. Let me tell you a problem with wanting somebody who grew up in on the system with food stamps is when they find their way out and have success, sometimes they go right-leaning because it's, hey, man, you should just get your shit together.
It.
And
why
I did it.
And
this is how you did it. Yeah. You don't want any of that stuff. It's going to cut your knees out. Get away from all that and follow me. Now, that if that could be done in a compassionate way, maybe that's a thing. Maybe that's – but I haven't seen that. I haven't seen that come out of anything yet.
Do you think it's foolish to want children to learn empathy
when they're
in school? Like just
In school? Empathy is sort of set up by age 5, as is self-esteem. So you mentioned you have shitty self-esteem.
Absolutely.
I do too. And I actually consider that an asset. Because when you have shitty self-esteem, you're holding yourself accountable to everything. When something goes wrong, you figure it's you.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is when things go right, you figure anybody can do it because, hey, I did it. So there's an arrogance that goes along with it you have to watch out for. But in terms of it as long as it doesn't cause you to feel diminished and depressed, if it's just a posture, like if something goes wrong, it must be me because, hey, it's me. That can be helpful. Can you imagine how if it's the other way? It's like something goes wrong or you do something wrong and your esteem is high. You're like, well, it couldn't be me. Why would I? Hey, man, it's me. I don't do anything wrong.
I know that person.
Yeah, not good. I don't like that. But empathy, empathy is a complicated process. It's the highest order of what the human brain can do. And it's built off, I'm sure your therapist will, and you probably appreciate this now that you've been in therapy. I'm leaning in with purpose.
I received it.
is that two bodies in space with close eye contact with me right now I'm speaking to you, but the really powerful part is when I sit and just experience your feeling state, allowing you to feel felt and then reflecting something back to you, most importantly on my face, more than the words even. And that interaction, you can appreciate that as a mom with kids, you know, going down there and being with them. That interaction millions of times is how empathy is built.
So that – I know that didn't happen for me.
Me neither. Yeah. It's happening in therapy, though.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, so
happening.
I can feel
that
there is like you have a scaffolding where that's starting to happen to you.
Yeah, it had to.
But it's a little fragile, and you got to build it all up, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the work of therapy. And then when you've been there, it's clear to me you have a good therapist because I can see it, the work. And once it's built up, then you can do it to other people. Then you can be there for them in a way that can build empathy. Now, none of us, you know, particularly when you're a teen mom and stuff, you know, it's impossible. It's just impossible. But kids have a way of getting what they need from moms and things like that. And it doesn't have to be a disaster. In fact, the data on teen moms is the kids end up better than we would predict, typically.
Nice. That's great.
So
I would say I read a lot of books when I had my son because I was so set on not doing what my mother did. And you know, my son has pretty good self-esteem. He's the one in the documentary when they asked me if I'm okay, he says she's trying her best. She's doing her best.
Yeah,
but he's very
that's an empathic response.
I
would separate in your head empathy and self-esteem. They're different things. But so anyway, so he's how old is he now?
29.
Doing good.
He's doing he's doing pretty good.
And by the way, he's strapped with being a millennial, which is already.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny. He's just like, he pushes back. First of all, he's not on social media. So he pushes back a lot of a lot of the stuff is I need to sort this out for myself.
Good.
As opposed to group speak.
Good.
Or really.
Maybe he's the leader we're looking for.
Yeah, he is. He really is. He really is just like, yeah, I'm not subscribing to that. And the other thing is he doesn't hate anybody, even if they don't agree, if he doesn't agree with their views, which
that's how it should be, right?
Right. But that's not
I know. I wrote a book with my daughter and she has a very different construct than I do of the world. And as we were doing the book and the presentation of the book, I thought, oh, I get her point of view. And I had a really interesting experience. I admire it. I disagree with it, but yes. I get it and I admire it. And that piece, especially getting to admiration for somebody's point of view, it was actually surprising to me. I thought, oh, we don't have that today. We don't have it.
No, I got creamed because there's the mayor of Miami, Francis Suarez, who's Republican, is someone that I have a lot of admiration and respect for. He's a Republican, and that's, you know, historically, I don't agree with a lot of Republican views, but I have a lot of respect for him because he's been very active in the community that I grew up in, the inner city. And he's done a lot of stuff for the people in the community that I grew up in, where I've never seen, you know, the Democratic mayor of my city present in those places, like scared to go to those places. And so somebody was, you know, just sent me a message the other day and was like, why didn't you tell me he was a Republican? And I'm like, you can Google that.
Why do we have to have these labels? Can't we vote for the person? We need a middle ground with people aren't on one side or the other.
Well, you know what it is that everybody has to have an identity now. Ugh. They have to be a label. They have to identify with Red Sox.
I hope that's too much.
It's dumb. It's like we're the kids of Lord of the Flies. Like we've become so polarized. How is it that you can identify completely with one point of view, with a group, and say I agree with everything these people are saying? Where is your critical thinking? Where is your absolute? I would not be able to be a respectable liberal if I didn't question some of the things that liberals do.
See, you've used the word liberal three times now, and I think you are a liberal. I don't think you're a progressive.
Well, you know, I think I'm somewhere in between.
Right, that's liberal.
Right,
that's liberal now.
Yeah,
liberal is a middle ground.
Yeah, well, I don't even know anymore.
Yeah, progressive is you're either, it's like a religion. You're either all in or you're evil. You're sinful. You're out. It's like you have to accept all the dogma, the whole canon, or you are a sinner. And
I don't agree with any of it. Like, right. I don't wholly agree with any. So I don't identify with any group because I don't think that any of these groups have been good for my people. So what's the point of saying even progressives? I'm on the Young Turks. I host on there. I go on the show. Those are my friends. I love them dearly. But for me to say I belong to a group is just toxic for me because none of these groups have been beneficial to the improvement and the conditions of people of color, black people in this country.
I've been saying for the last 5 years we need a pragmatism party. Just one that solves problems. Just what's good for this, do what's good. Let's do that. What's right? Mm-hmm. Let's just do it. If it works, good. Let's do it.
But we try. But I will say this about the people that I work with at TYT is they are actually really trying to work for solutions. And they are also, you know, met with a lot of resistance from people who just want to belong to the group and don't want to do anything. It's just cool to say I'm a progressive. I'm a right winger. I'm a this. I'm a that. It's y'all shit on the Bloods and the Crips for a long time, and you've become that just with nice cars and a nice place to live. You know what I'm saying? You shit on these gangs who had to do what they had to do to survive in these communities where they didn't have any food, they didn't have any money, they didn't have anything, but you're doing the same thing and you think you're cool because you live in a nice house and you drive a nice car and you get to say you're this. I say all these people can go to hell, man. Like, they're just full of shit.
I think what it really is, they feel guilty because they live in a nice house, a nice car. So I'm relieving myself of my guilt by telling you I'm looking out for your people. I know what's right. Anytime, one thing I hope you'll take away from this conversation is anytime ideology is the strict driving force of it, bad for people.
Absolutely. 100%.
That's why you need just solutions. Just what works. Study it. What works. Mm-hmm. Do it. That's it. Period.
Yeah. That's why I said that joke. And some people cringed when I said, you know, it's so cool to say Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. It's so cool to wear the shirt. Mm-hmm. It became the...
It's a great slogan.
It just became the pink ribbon. Mm-hmm. Remember the pink ribbon? Oh, people absolutely. Just put the pink ribbon on. I'm against breast cancer. What the hell are you doing to help with the solution? Like, really? Because it's just bullshit. And I'm tired of it. And I've never been one. I don't belong to your group. So when people claim me, I'm like, nah, I'm not with y'all. I'm over here by myself.
What I liked about your stand-up. You took aim at everybody.
Yeah.
Everybody. And you had a point of view also. So
thank you.
So, and I don't see,
I don't see many people doing that today. They watch out for certain territory or they
defend
certain.
Comedians are scared. Yeah, they're scared.
And what happened to comedy, man? What you're supposed to be, and you are representative of this, but comedians are supposed to be the ones that take everything on.
Yeah.
And make us look at stuff. At least make us look at things differently. They're afraid.
People are scared. You know what's funny? It's like it pisses me off that I'm held to a higher standard than the school superintendent, than the sheriff in your community, than your local congressman or your state congressman. But you want to worry about what the comedians are saying? We're like, you know us. We are damaged people. We show up. I'm not a pastor. I go on stage and stand on wooden boxes to make jokes, to heal my pain.
Trauma is underlying comedy always.
One day.
Childhood trauma, man.
You already know. And you're going to hold me to a higher standard than a senator or, you know, a local politician?
Well, you know what's interesting? As you speak about it, the ones that are sort of either not traumatized or have healed their trauma are the ones that are the most woke and the most sort of self-righteous with their wokeness, because they aren't out there doing the comedy out in the clubs. They're the ones on TV with their own show, and they magically have opinions about your comedy. So one of the things I noticed, and maybe I didn't, there was part of your stand-up. I was sort of zooming through doing something else. Sorry, at the same time.
It's okay.
But I didn't hear a lot of romantic comedy. About your a little bit, but not a lot. It was sort of the dog not barking. It caught my attention, and I thought, well, good. Now that I know you, and good because you're doing therapy, and you want to be in a place
before. Absolutely.
But how I'm imagining that is still a fertile territory for you. What's going on there?
So I think the next special will probably be
that's
about
what I figured.
That. I've never really talked about it.
Yeah.
I
bet it's very interesting.
It is very interesting.
Because the dad thing sets it all up.
Boom! You just said it. I'm actually writing a book about it. But the funny thing is that weird 3-day trip that I took to the Dominican Republic to meet my father, I came full circle because I realized that one thing that I thought was going to happen when I saw this man is what I keep looking for in these romantic relationships.
Right.
And that really is where it comes from, feeling the rejection from this man.
Yeah, the abandonment.
Yes, the abandonment.
Solve the abandonment.
USANA Health Sciences has created USANA Active Nutrition. That's right, products for weight management, digestive health, energy, hydration. Whole line of gluten-free, and it's made with natural ingredients. USANA sent me a box of Active Nutrition products, and they're delicious for one thing. They're made with high-quality ingredients, backed through research and cutting-edge science. But they're a company you can trust. Thousands of Olympic and professional athletes around the world are trusting USANA. Some of the exciting new products you'll find at USANA's Active Nutrition line include the convenient peanut butter snack bar, which I dig, and the electrolyte replacement drink. You know, I'm a big about volume replacement. They have a detox tea, and they have Metabolism Plus for metabolic support. Visit USANA.com, USANA.com, to see each Active Nutrition product for yourself, and make sure to use that promo code PODCAST15 at checkout, and you will save 15% on your Active Nutrition order. This promotion is for new retail customers only. Some product restrictions may apply. Support your life in motion with USANA Active Nutrition. Of course, our friends at AMCN, Air Medcare Network, want to remind you that health insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of an emergency medical flight. Even when comprehensive coverage, you can still get hit with a deductible or big copay. Protect your family and your finances with an Air Medcare Network membership. As a member, if an emergency arises, the expense of air medical transport is completely covered when flown by an AMCN provider. Membership costs as little as $85 a year and covers your entire household every day, even when you're away from home. That is just pennies a day. And we all know the unexpected can happen. An AMCN membership is protection no family should be without. And for a limited time, as a Dr. Drew podcast listener, you will get up to a $50 e-gift card when you join. That really takes it down to less than pennies a day. Simply visit Air Medcare Network, airmedcarenetwork.com/Drew, and use that offer code Drew.
So it was very...
The problem is, here's the really interesting thing. And again, I'm sorry for interrupting you.
No, but okay. tell me, because this is therapy.
But is that him as a model for a love and a love map, I'll speak frankly, he's an asshole.
Yep.
He's an asshole. But that's your model of something that is deeply connected and loving. Mm. And anybody, and that sets up attraction to more of those. Mm. And guess what? You'll have lightning bolts when you see one of those guys that fits that love map, we call it, or a fittedness with him. And guess what that guy will happily do for you is, once he sucks you in, abandon you.
Yeah.
And be the asshole that he is. So you have an attraction. No one ever talks about this, how we set up attractions. Because we always wonder, why do these guys – what am I doing? Well, how does it always happen? It's the attraction that sends you in with the bad guy, a bad picker in the first place.
Mm.
And so you're attracted to assholes. And
so how do you fix that? What do you do to
– therapy fixes it. It does tremendously. And you're sort of in the middle zone in terms of your therapy, I imagine. And so you're sort of now can imagine being with somebody that's not so exciting.
Yeah.
Right? The exciting guy, guarantee you, every time will abandon you. Guaranteed.
Yeah.
Because we're a perfect instrument. And we've been attuned by somebody in our past to that. But as you start – you even said it in your stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
You started saying that, you know, you can be with a guy who'll take you out really nice, blah, 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 and he'll sleep with your sister. but there's another guy a little bit more advanced beyond that who will love you and treat you nice and not sleep with your sister.
Yeah.
But he's not so – there may – we always say look for butterflies, not lightning bolts in your attractions.
Oh, nice.
Because the lightning bolts will send you more towards your dad.
Yeah.
And one day you will have more lightning bolty stuff – for more healthy people.
That makes sense.
That all fit?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It did. When I came back, I was like, oh, it took me a few weeks. And then I was like, this is why I, not just in romantic relationships, friendships.
Oh, interesting.
You know, just like, I was like, oh, I overcompensate in my relationships emotionally.
Rescuing, you mean?
Yeah. I'm my friends and I, April Macy, who's also a comedian, so like we like the wounded birds.
Of course.
Right?
Of course.
But we go back and forth. I am so thankful that I went to therapy before I went to see my dad.
Oh my God, yes.
I came back and I was like, pause. This is on hold and it is okay. We are going to learn to embark on the greatest romance of life ever, the one with oneself. And that was just something I've never done. I've always taken care. I raised my siblings, raised my children. You know, I'm raising my mother, if truth be told. And so it's just been constantly taking care of other people emotionally and always finding someone who is emotionally not available to take care of me back.
Yeah. And you've said it in sort of shorter words when you said I'm, you know, codependent and
my mom, yeah,
everybody.
Sure.
That's just how you set up. But my guess is some of the rescuing and caretaking is a form of protest. Don't leave me.
Mm, yeah, that's what Al-Anon says. I do all the stuff.
Oh, good. Okay, good. All right, good. It's really good. It's good because one day. All of this becomes an asset because you are a really good caretaker and you do experience yourself through other people and their experiences. And that's hugely empathic. But what you have to watch out for is boundaries.
Yeah, I don't have them.
Right.
I'm learning them now.
And just so to know that when you want to rescue somebody from their pain, it's because you need the pain in you to stop, not because it's their pain you really need to have stop. They may not need their pain to stop. They may need to struggle with their pain, but I'm a coach too, and it mobilizes our pain.
Yeah.
And we like need it to stop. We need to fix them. We got to fix them. But when you start learning what's theirs and what's yours, which is a really weird experiential thing if you're a codependent, you can sort of sit. It can be a tender thing to sort of be in with somebody's pain and not stop it.
Mm.
It's hard to imagine that, right? It's codependent. You want to fix it.
Always, and you know, it's like my ex-husband, who was not the best ex-husband, said to me 3 days ago. He said, "I've always wanted to tell you this. You really need to learn how to say no."
Well, and that's the codependency, yeah.
Yeah, but I was like, it's so funny. One of the people who took advantage of that the most.
Him, of course.
Even said, like, yeah.
But you're changing, so now he's in a place where he can say stuff like that to you and you receive it.
Yeah.
Before you would have been.
I would have punched him in the face. Yeah. Not.
Or
yeah.
Something.
Something. I never punched him
in the face. No domestic violence here. We're not.
Never punched him in the face. Always wanted to, but never did.
Oh, my goodness. We're getting on some interesting territory. So What do you want to ask me? I feel like I've...
I want to ask you, what do you think is the most helpful thing that a person can do to deal with depression?
Your own depression?
Yeah, your own depression.
Well, there's different layers to that, okay? So, first of all, I guess to know whether you're depressed, dysthymic, blue, I mean, am I, or is it something else? Do I have unresolved grief? Am I have PTSD? Mm. What do I have? What is this? Because there's, you kind of need a diagnosis before you got a treatment.
So
right?
You go to a psychiatrist for this,
for
not
this.
A your psychologist,
ideally,
not a therapist.
Ideally,
right.
Yes. Okay. And you know, what is going on with me? So what is the construct? And once you have a construct, and let's say, yes, you have unipolar depression, not bipolar depression. If you have bipolar depression, you need meds.
Okay.
Period. End. If you're unipolar depression, really the first thing is, you know, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. So it's make sure your nutrition is good, sleep right, balance your life, keep people that really give a shit about you around you and use them, pay attention, make mm-hmm. them pay attention to you. And again, hard thing for a co to do. Mm. Just start with that, okay. Number one. Number two, you know whether, you know, what the signs are when you're getting into trouble. If you can't function, mm-hmm. right? If you can't function or you're suicidal, then it's a medical problem then. Then you got to make sure a doctor is involved and it may need medication, it may not. And then have some sort of long-term treatment plan, which is usually ideally what you're doing, psychotherapy or something like that, or group, or maybe it's 12-step if you can't afford it. This is the thing that drives me crazy. I'm glad you're involved in some sort of 12-step program mm-hmm. because the research shows clearly mm-hmm. that 12-step works. Mm-hmm. It's as efficacious as many professionally managed things. I'm not saying you should avoid professionally managed services. I'm just saying that literature is clear. And it's free and it's yep. available everywhere and it's available 24/7. And mm-hmm. why we are not availing ourselves of this, it drives me out of my mind. The same people, I'm not believing in it. The research is just there. Yeah. And the same people that want to talk about healthcare expenses shit on 12-step. It's like, mm-hmm. hey, here's a solution. Everybody, it works. Anyway, so that's my little
thing. Oh, I've gone to Debtors Anonymous. I've gone to the Under Earners group. I learned about them through Al-Anon. Like,
this is all filling, right? Filling the,
yeah,
the void.
Like,
it's all co-filling. If you were, it's the opposite of drug. It's the converse of drug addiction.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Same stuff. The debting, the buying, the yeah. whatever to fill the void,
yep.
the saving, the rescuing. It's just that's your drug as opposed to heroin or whatever.
Yeah. Learning how to – and just learning – being able to accept that you don't make enough money to live the lifestyle that you think you need to live, to have the value that you think you should have in yeah. this, you know, it's.
Here's the thing about rich people. They always live under their means.
Yeah, they
always.
Do.
Always. Unless they're crazy, you know.
No, you know. I know.
Even Elon Musk lives in a little mini house. You know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah.
He's interested in building his companies, not in spending money.
Yeah. Tiffany is very, very judicious about her spending.
She's after her.
Uh-oh, there you go. You're going to get canceled well, again.
But that's what I would like to see some more funny from her about. I
yeah.
think that'd be hysterical to have her doing that.
Yeah, she's always judicious about her money.
Yeah. I have that heritage on one side of my family system, so I know what that mm-hmm. what rains down on you from that. But listen, I have to wrap this up. It okay. has been a pleasure to
I
talk
know.
To you.
This has been healing. This is just what I needed today.
Oh, good. Well, it's kind of what I needed too, and for a totally different reason. I need to see that people can get up and speak honestly and take aim at anything, and yeah. and comedians being comedians again. And I look forward to you talking more about men because I'm sure you're going to have some crazy.
Oh man, I have seven
men,
journals.
We're so fucked up. And if you can,
I said it in there. I know they're going to come for me because I said men are crazy, but I know they're coming for me.
We actually are more disturbed by women who fall for men's bullshit.
Oh.
And we like to see it when you call men out because I was watching something. I was watching like a reality show or something with my wife yesterday. And she was like, oh, he's so cute. I go, you don't see that dude, he is manipulating her and he will not be able to work. He's so impaired. This guy will not be able to get a job. And you can't see that because he's being romantic. It's oh like, my oh my God. So that's the kind of stuff we actually admire when women can see it. We like it. So
oh, I appreciate
yeah,
that.
So. All right. Well, listen, go watch the comedy special. It's available on HBO Max. It's worth your time. Also, follow Ada on Funny Ada, as well as the YouTube page, Ada Rodriguez. Is there some outtakes from the series on that?
I mean, I'm sure they're going to be on HBO Max's page.
Everything's going to be there. So check it out. Anything else coming? Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else we should look for you out in the road?
Well, my show is developing. I'm developing a series at HBO Max based on my life.
Is it like a script? Cartoon or real?
No, it's real.
Because I think cartoon would be interesting too.
Oh, well, I'm also working on an animated series with ITV Studios where you can do a little more, you know, that in animation.
That's why I think it'd be funny. It's sort of your version of the Family Guy would be very interesting.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Yeah. So we're working on it.
Oh, great. Well, whatever we can do to support you, please let us know.
Thank you.
And it's a pleasure to talk to you. And hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, the best podcast to do right after therapy.
Okay. I'll see you all next time.
For call-in times and topics, follow the show on Twitter at Dr. Drew Podcast. That's D-R-D-R-E-W Podcast. The music from today's episode can be found on the Swingin' Sounds of the Dr. Drew Podcast, now available on iTunes. And while you're there, don't forget to rate the show. The Dr. Drew Podcast is a Corolla Digital production and is produced by Chris Loxamana and Gary Smith. For more information, go to drdrew.com. All conversation and information exchanged during the participation in the Dr. Drew Podcast is intended for educational and entertainment purposes only. Do not confuse this with treatment or medical advice or direction. Nothing on these podcasts supplement or supersede the relationship and direction of your medical caretakers. Although Dr. Drew is a licensed physician with specialty board certifications by the American Board of Internal Medicine and the American Board of Addiction Medicine, he is not functioning as a physician in this environment. The same applies to any professionals who may appear on the podcast or drdrew.com.